You're listening to a stage talk titled Revealing the New Bellingcat Toolkit with the Bellingcat team. This week we were joined by my colleague, Joanna Wild, and volunteer members of our new toolkit project. Our previous Bellingcat Investigations toolkit, created on a Google Sheet many years ago, became a staple resource for newsrooms, researchers, and NGOs. But it was riddled with issues, from a lack of descriptions to broken tool links. Joanna and a team of volunteers took on that challenge and have now launched a new online investigations toolkit for everyday use. You can find all the links mentioned in the talk in the description of this podcast. The talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Marr, on Thursday, the 26th of September, 2024, in the Bellingcat Discord server. So hello, thanks for joining us in this stage talk. Today I'm joined by my amazing colleague Joanna Wild, who is recently a 2024 Nieman Berkman Klein Fellow at Harvard and currently heads our investigative tech team. We're going to be speaking today about her project for the fellowship, repurposing our popular online investigations toolkit for the modern researcher. This project truly was a collaborative effort and continues to be. And Joanna may be joined on stage during this talk by some of the volunteers who have supported that work. But no pressure, guys, if you're listening in the audience. Joanna is more comfortable with her camera off, so this talk will not involve cameras, but we will be demonstrating the use of the toolkit by sharing our screens, as hopefully all of you can see. As we talk, please put your questions in the chat and I'll ask them as we move into the Q&A section. Please note that it will just be myself, Joanna, and possibly a couple of volunteers that appear on stage. All of the other questions we'll be taking in print form in the chat on your right-hand side of your screen. I'll be quiet now, though, and pass the mic to Joanna to give you a lowdown on what the updates to the toolkit involve. Joanna.
Yeah, hello, everyone. I'm really happy to be here. And I will talk a little bit about our very new toolkit today. And a little bit of background information first. So Bellingcat has had a toolkit for many, many years. I don't remember for how many years, but we actually had like a simple Google Sheet. And in this Google Sheet, we have listed various tools that are super helpful for open source investigators. And they were already categorized, right, according to categories like maps and satellites or social media or people. And we used this toolkit quite a lot, also in workshops, but also the wider open source researcher community has used it quite a lot. But it was always difficult for us to keep this thing up to date because tools change all the time. Some tools don't work anymore. New tools come up. So we always struggled with this. And then I recently had the chance to do a fellowship. So I did a fellowship, a Nieman Berkman Klein fellowship at Harvard University. And I really wanted to use this time to understand why, despite our toolkit, despite many other toolkits that are out there, it's still difficult for open source researchers to find tools. And the thing is that I had already focused on this question earlier with Bellingcat, and I had done surveys, and these surveys had clearly showed me that researchers really struggled to find tools. So 80% of the people that we surveyed, they said, okay, I don't know how to find tools, or I find them, but it takes me a lot of time. So this process has always been difficult for people. And I wanted to understand why. And that's why I did, together with the students, time 40 interviews with open source researchers and asked them, okay, why is it so difficult? And how do you actually find tools? And less surprising, they told us that they often use Google, right? So often people just Google maybe the area of research they are trying to work on, or they even try to imagine how a tool might be called. But it's still not always working. So despite the majority of people using search engines to find a tool, this often really doesn't work because people don't really know what to type in. And even if they get a list of results, they often have no idea what these tools are really capable of. So the top priority thing that people do to find tools doesn't work, which is quite sad, right? And there are, of course, various other things that people use to find tools. And one thing that usually works really well for researchers is to just read blogs. So there are many open source research blogs out there, but also different websites that present tools. And also just to read the research of other people and to see, okay, do they maybe mention a tool that they use during the process? So this has been mentioned by people as very, very useful. And on top of that, especially in the last 2 years or so, newsletters have come up because, we can see that specifically since Twitter has been taken over by Elon Musk, people have turned more to newsletters, and open source researchers who share tools, they also started more and more newsletters because they wanted to become a little bit independent from what has been Twitter. So there are various tools, ways to find tools, and some of them also work. But still, what people told me, and which was quite interesting, is that nevertheless, even if you found a tool somewhere, let's say you found it in a newsletter, the moment you do research, you often don't know or don't remember where you found this tool, right? You might have seen something in a newsletter, but you don't remember even in which newsletter, or at least in which edition of the newsletter. And people still feel lost, right? Because they have a vague idea, okay, there should be a tool, I heard about it, but I don't find it via Google. And I really don't remember how it was called and what exactly it did. So that was really interesting that it's still difficult. And what I personally had assumed is that toolkits could have a place there. So if you remember a tool some vaguely, but you don't know where it was, you could just go to a toolkit and to find it there, maybe. But what I learned is that people don't do this. And that was really very surprising for me because there are so many toolkits out there, not only our own previous toolkit, right? But also other organizations have toolkits, and also individual researchers often make available their own toolkit, which is great, right? But nevertheless, it just doesn't help somehow, right? And one thing that I really found so surprising is when I ask people, okay, so what do you do? You are doing a research at the moment, and you either know there is a tool out there because you heard about it and forgot which one was it, or you hope there is a tool out there. What do you do in this case? And what people told me is that they just usually leave the screen and contact people they know. So instead of searching online, and we are so online in this space, right? We spend whole days on the screen, talking often with nobody. And sometimes we talk with people, but there's a lot of screen time. And nevertheless, if you want to find a tool, you often leave your screen, or at least you start communicating with people. And people either contact colleagues, or they contact people in the space that they know somehow, and they really approach them and ask, look, I'm doing this right now. Do you know a tool that can do the following three things that it should cover? And yeah, this was so surprising to me, because in our very digital space, we are very much not using any digital tool very much to find tools. And based on this finding, I started to ask myself the question, is there a way to transfer this way of communication and sharing knowledge between people who have already used the tool? Can we transfer this process to the online world where we already are? Because not everyone might have colleagues, right? Not everyone is already well connected in our space. Many people enter the open source research space at the moment, and there are at a disadvantage because they don't know whom to contact. And this is why I really wanted to design a new toolkit that helps people find the information that they usually only get within the community if they know people, right? So the idea was to design a toolkit that is more helpful than toolkits that we had out there. And the reason why many toolkits were not very helpful, so the top reason was that most of them were just not kept up to date. And I already mentioned earlier that, unfortunately, this was also the case for our own toolkit. So we always had tools in the old toolkit that did not work anymore because we just didn't have the time to maintain it. So that is really annoying. If people come to a toolkit and they see that half of the tools there are not up to date, they often just leave and they actually never come back. And I wanted to find a way to make it better so that people really come back. And that's why I asked people, what do you want to see in a toolkit? And interestingly, it was very easy for people to tell me what they wanted to see. So number one was really, okay, it needs to be up to date. But the other thing was, okay, I need a description of the tool. I need to know what problem does a tool solve that is in a toolkit. Otherwise, it's useless for me. They really wanted information on the costs of the tool because open source researchers really hate if they go to a tool, they can do 3 searches for free, and suddenly the tool asks them to make a subscription, right? That happens and people really hate it. Open source researchers also want to know how difficult is it to use a tool, right? What requirements does a tool have? So do I need to have a phone number to use it or not? What limitations does the tool have? So what can it do and what can't the tool do? And also important, any ethical considerations around this tool. And they want that it links to either guides on how to use this tool and also on articles, on research articles on that shows, okay, what can I even do? What type of research can I do with this tool? And this way we really got a very clear guideline basically from the open source researcher community how our new toolkit needs to look like. And based on this, we tried to build what people wanted basically. And we have a toolkit that still has categories like in the past, right? In our previous toolkit, like it has categories like maps and satellites. And in this category, it lists various tools and you see a very short description if you go to our toolkit. But the big change that we made is that for each tool, we created its own page. And if you click on this, then you get a page only with the description for this tool, and which also really goes into details. Okay, what do I need to consider? What is the cost of the tool? What are its limitations? And the special thing is also that since it's so difficult to keep such a toolkit up to date, we clearly saw that we need to involve the wider open source researcher community, right? We really need to do this and we need to work together and we need to have several people, as many people as possible, who all contribute to the toolkit. And that's what we are trying at the moment. So we work with a group of Bellingcat volunteers and they write these tool descriptions that we have in our toolkit. And they also keep these descriptions up to date. So if they describe a specific tool, for instance, Wikimapia, then they write a description. And if something changes with the tool, they go back to their description and update basically the information that comes out and is new. And that is really where we put most of the work in this toolkit, and where we hope that we will provide way more information over time, right, in this space. We also have today volunteers here, and I will ask them to talk a little bit about their experience just in a little bit. But before I do this, I just want to show you show you one other thing that you can use, or you can see it if you go to our toolkit. And that is an AI search. So we have an AI search feature in our toolkit. And if you click on a search box that you find on the page, you can ask the toolkit questions, right? You can, for instance, ask the toolkit, okay, can you suggest me a tool to search Telegram? Okay. And then it suggests you, hopefully, the Telegram tool descriptions that we have in our toolkit. And what is important to understand is that this AI search really is there to find content from our toolkit. So we don't really want that our AI search searches elsewhere online. We have thought about it a lot, but it's not our goal that it includes or works based on information from everywhere. So it's really focused on the content that we have in our toolkit. But nevertheless, one can experiment a little bit. And for instance, at some point, I asked our AI search a little bit more detailed question. So I asked, okay, I'm an open source researcher. I have never done a geolocation. I found a picture on Instagram that shows a destroyed house, but I really don't know where this house is. And the house on the picture casts clearly visible shadows. What tools can I use to geolocate this image? And what is the exact research process? And the answer that I got in this case is, of course, not perfect, but what our toolkit did, or the AI search interface, showed us a list of several tools that you might consider. For instance, in that case, it suggested, okay, try out the Bellingcat OpenStreetMap search tool. And it also provided a bit of basic information how to use the tool. It suggested, for instance, Instagram location search tool and another tool called GeoSpy. So just as an example, and it really brought up the texts that the toolkit team has written, right? So that's the goal of it. And then it brings you to the toolkit, the descriptions in the toolkit. So if it tells you something, then you can click on the sources that are listed there, and it brings you to the detailed description. So that is the gist of it. Of course, you can, if you're interested in AI search, many people are at the moment, you can get more creative. And you can also just go to ChatGPT or Perplexity AI or whatever you use, and you can just experiment a bit. And I also did this, and it's actually fun to do it. So for instance, I used Perplexity AI, and I asked the same question, right? I'm an open source researcher. I have never done a geolocation. I found a picture on Instagram that shows a destroyed house, but I don't know where this house is. And then I give also the toolkit. So I tell Perplexity AI in this case, okay, go to the Bellingcat toolkit and answer this question. And the result was quite similar in the sense that it also suggested me a few tools like the OpenStreetMap search tool and the Instagram location search tool, a few others like Google Earth and shadow analysis tools, right? But the difference is really that it is more diverse in the sources, because Perplexity AI also links out to sources and gives you information, okay, what are the sources? And here I could clearly see it was also going to certain articles on the Bellingcat website or on the Bellingcat YouTube, right? Which is not so much the goal of our integrated AI search. So feel free to experiment, but it can help. It can really help to get an idea what type of tools you can use. But it's not the case that it can really help you with your investigation. You still need your own open source research investigations. And it can just give you a little bit of inspiration, or maybe if you really don't know where to start, a few ideas. But yeah, also don't overestimate the AI search feature that we have. And yeah, our toolkit is collaborative, right? So that is really the goal that we have, that it's not only something that I write or maybe three Bellingcat staff members write, but we really want to include the wider open source research community and to make it a space that makes sense for all of us, because we don't yet have a space. There are good toolkits out there, but I haven't seen toolkits that really have the description of a tool in such detail and that also inform us about limitations, how much does it cost. And to make this work, we need to work together. Nobody can do this alone. Also, we cannot do it alone. So, and that's why you can contribute to this toolkit in various ways if you're interested. So, for instance, we have a feedback sheet and we can link it below. And if you want to give us feedback on the toolkit, that is super useful because we are constantly developing it. And yeah, we want to know what works and what doesn't work. And we also want to open several times a year a sheet where you can suggest tool descriptions yourself. And yeah, we are quite strict in what we accept and what we don't accept, but you're very welcome to submit something there and we will look at it. And the other option is that you can also apply to become part of the Bellingcat volunteer community, and we can also add a link to that there. And if you are accepted to this program, then you can become part of the toolkit group, but you can also participate in various other projects that we have there. Yeah. And finally, we are also open if you are part of a newsroom or a university. We are also very open in collaborating in any way or in several ways, because we really want to create something that makes sense for all of us and helps us understand tools way better than it often was the case in our work. Yeah, thank you so much. And I know that we have people here in the group who have contributed to the toolkit, and I would really like to invite you to maybe share a little bit about your experience of contributing to this toolkit, writing toolkit descriptions. Yeah, what experience did you have with this?
Thanks so much, Joanna. Thank you so much for that amazing explanation. I wanted to ask, is the AI search bar, is that currently powered by OpenAI, ChatGPT, or is it powered by something else?
Yeah, it's powered by OpenAI, yeah. But it's really focused on what we created here, right? It's focused on finding specific descriptions and text from our own toolkit, so that it makes it easier for us to find our way through the toolkit. So use it like that. But yeah, it's powered by OpenAI.
One of your volunteers has just requested to speak, so I'm going to invite them to the stage. When you come on the stage, if you could just give yourself a little introduction, however you want to be represented, and then yeah, just talk about your experience. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. So hi, yeah, thanks for letting me talk, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to work on the toolkit with you. So I'm Martin. My background is in social psychology and cognitive neuroscience, and I'm a tool guy. So basically, whether it's research tools or whether I'm in my workshop where I build like physical things, right? I love tools. And I came to work on the toolkit through my tech fellowship at Bellingcat, where we are still working on testing a nice tool that can be used for chronolocation. In terms of toolkit tools, I focus more on social networks, right? I'm looking how people influence each other and or anything that you need to get to the center nodes or center people, influencers of a disinformation network, for example, right? So these are the tools that I prefer. And the fellowship opened a lot of new exciting opportunities for me. I've taken courses. Shout out to GHN. And I'm also teaching teaching students at my own university using open source data. So my approach to the toolkit is that I want to help Bellingcat and the wonderful OSINT community by picking a set of tools that fit nicely together and that I can become an expert in over time. So yeah, while not all of the toolkit descriptions that I'm maintaining are quite there yet, others are very detailed. And that's because, as Johanna explained, we have priorities, right? There are amazing tools like Invid, for example, that have incredible capabilities and they've received a lot of funding, but they don't advertise because they're basically NGO-funded tools that where a lot of work. Invid is a little browser extension that you can and should have for just basically all you need for fact checking in one little package. Not all of it, but most of it. But they're free and they're useful, and everybody can use Invid, right? It's vital to get tools like this not only in newsrooms but in classrooms as well, right? Because you know, fact checking will become more and more important. So these are on the top of my priority list, and then there are tools which are easy to use but cost a little bit, but will allow you to quickly do a little research into information channels and where they're from and whom they're connected to. And yeah, these are important to me as well, because believe me, learning to program your own Telegram monitoring tools can be very frustrating. So I always try to speak to the person who's most likely to use a particular tool. And tools that give you the most bang for the buck, they're on the top of my priority list. And then there are other tools that you can apply in a broad range of scenarios, and they're incredibly powerful, and they're also free, like open source, like Gephi, for example. But you need to bring a set of skills already with you. And so while they're also, I'm also like really enthusiastic about finally finishing the Gephi toolkit entry, they're less important and less to my heart than Invid, for example. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I wanted to ask, how much time does it take you per entry in the toolkit? How much precious time are we stealing from you when adding tools to the toolkit?
Oh, that very much is that very much depends. Like really, I can make a toolkit entry in like an hour or two, right? But for other toolkits, for example, like I'm working on the Obsidian toolkit, for example, or Obsidian. If you haven't heard of it or if you don't use it, it's a huge note taking tool. And of course, I can't give you screenshots with my own private note takings, right? Because like they contain like, information that I don't want everybody to read. So I have to create data sets for Gephi, for example, like network data that can't really have or contain personal identifiable information. So these can take many hours. Or days. Oh, definitely many days.
Thank you so much for your time on that. Joanna, if someone is joining the volunteer community and wants to get involved with the toolkit production, what kind of resources do they need? Kind of who are you looking for in regards to the toolkit maintainers? What do they need to know and be good at? Like Martin here.
Yeah, thank you for this question. So I think people really don't need to have any background in open source research yet, because there are, as Martin already mentioned, there are basically two ways of participating in this project. The one is you have already used tools a lot, you already know how they work, and now you write about it. This is definitely the approach that is faster, right? Because if I use a tool on a daily basis, it's way easier for me to write about it too, because I have already seen what limitations it has. When does it work? When doesn't it work? Do I think it is worth paying for it? So I have background information already that I can include in my toolkit description. But we also see that we have many people who have not yet so much experience, and they just use the task to write a description about a tool to also learn by themselves. And I also notice this for myself, because I'm the one who is reading through each single description before it goes online. And often it is the case that you have used the tool and you think you know the tool. But by reading a description by someone who has tested it and who has spent a few hours only focusing on this tool, you still learn a lot of new things. So many tools I knew, I was completely surprised that it has certain features. I had no idea. And I think if a person is completely new to the field, of course, you have to put a bit more effort into it, right? But it's completely possible. So I feel that I like this project because it's very open to people from various backgrounds. And I think this is also exactly what we are as an open source researcher community. It's not the case that there are only journalists in this field, right? There are people from various backgrounds. Some don't use many tools usually in their work. Others use a lot of tools. But everyone is welcome and brings in a different perspective. And the different perspectives are really also reflected in how people look at a tool. And that's what I find so exciting. So we don't have one style of toolkit descriptions, but every description is different. It follows the structure that we have, but everyone comes with their own perspective. And I think that makes it way better, honestly, compared to the case if the Bellingcat team and the staff had written all the descriptions themselves. It brings various perspectives into this space. And I think that's exactly what we need. And it also makes it then easier, at least I hope, for people who are new to the field to understand what a tool does and what it can do.
Absolutely. We had a lot of people in the chat agreeing with you there. Sultan Life says, when you use a tool on a daily basis, you may have forgotten how someone who doesn't would search for it. I myself am very guilty of that. And Sarah says, I love newbie perspectives and extremely experienced perspectives. You can get a great understanding of tool learning curve problems from new users. Martin, you put a comment in there. Do you want to say that loud?
Yeah, sure. Why not? So the Obsidian toolkit, for example, is, I think it's live technically. It's just not done yet. I use it all the time, so I'm good with that. And reversely, I've worked a lot with Gephi, for example, as well. But again, to get a comprehensive toolkit with images, it's always a different story if you want to really take out all the personally identifiable data and make a like mock data set and still show the reader what it can do in our context, right? And so for that, it's really cool to have like a mock data set that you and I could have I had a nice Gephi data set about squirrels, for example. There's good examples often, but specifically for OSINT. So yeah, if you have a good OSINT fake Gephi network data, shoot it my way.
I wanted to ask, was there a consideration for those using the toolkit to highlight those tools that might need specialist knowledge, for example, coding know-how? Have you come across a lot of open source tools that require coding know-how, and how have you kind of flagged those within the toolkit?
I can code a little bit, like as a cognitive neuroscientist, you have to like analyze your own data all the time. So I'm quite familiar with, but then you get to hurdles, right? You get from the little bit of data transformation to all of a sudden having to run a Docker container, and that for someone who's not an infosec or is not a developer, that can be quite daunting. And that takes a little bit. And yes, I have crossed these thresholds. I think it's different for everyone. But the main tip that I can give is just like try, ask for help. ChatGPT, by the way, really great for tech support. My main use for it, tech support. But yeah.
Maybe to add, we don't clearly mark, okay, this is only for people with a technical background, because it's really difficult to give a specific level. So we have a section in the toolkit that is called level of difficulty. And there we basically have 5 levels of difficulty, with the number 1, very easy to use, and number 5, very difficult to use. And each person who writes a toolkit description chooses one level of difficulty. And we try to define these levels a little bit. So every tool that is a command line tool, which requires people to know a little bit to use the command line, is at least level 3 in our ranking, right? So it cannot be lower than level 3. But yeah, we are still experimenting with this, because what we found is that it's really difficult to give information on the level of difficulty of using a tool, because different people see it very differently. We have a little bit of a ranking system there, and we will also continue to experiment, because it's really difficult. We have people in our community who are completely technical, right? Who come from a technical background, have a technical perspective on how to use tools. But we also have people who are great researchers, but who don't have any technical knowledge. And every person has a different perspective, as I already mentioned. And you also see that in the descriptions sometimes. And what is also very important is that people with a technical background are often not the best to describe how to use a tool, because for them, yeah, not to say that they cannot be good. We have brilliant people with a technical background who are good at this. But I think it's way more difficult if you are very technical to describe how a tool works in easy words. That's what I learned during this project, because if you understand it yourself so well how it works, you can even not imagine what steps can be difficult for people who don't have a technical background. So what I found is that, of course, if you don't have a technical background, you will struggle way more to use the tool for the first time. But once you do, you can explain it much better, because you have struggled through all the steps and it's still very fresh in your mind. While if you have done the thing for 10 years, you're even not aware anymore where it can get difficult for people. Yeah.
I love the difficulty ranking. I think that's really useful. And it's good to know that the coding tools are only marked from 3 upwards. A lot of people in the chat admitting to using ChatGPT to solve their problems, including our Director of Research and Training, Giancarlo, who apparently is asking ChatGPT or the bartender to solve their problems, which is interesting. In terms of inclusion, you've mentioned that you want people to suggest tools for the database. In terms of inclusion criteria, what clarifies a tool as being okay for the database? What characteristics are we looking for?
Yeah. So what I know from previous surveys and talking with many open source researchers is really that, especially in the journalism communities and the human rights researcher communities, and these are basically the communities that I had in mind when designing this this toolkit, because there are many sub-communities in the open source researcher space, right? There is the intelligence world, there are people in the military world, there are many people analyzing open source data, working at companies, risk management, and so on. But the groups that I had mainly in mind are journalists and human rights researchers. Not to say that I don't want that the toolkit is not for everyone else, but these specific groups have the challenge that they often don't have much funding, right? And the specific challenge is that we have many open source researchers who work alone, they work in their free time on topics, or the journalists and human rights researcher communities who cannot afford expensive licenses to tools. And that's why the clear focus of the toolkit is on free-to-use tools. So that's really the focus. But we also decided that we still want to include some paid tools that are just very relevant in our space. But we really don't want the toolkit to be mainly for paid tools, because that would make it very inaccessible for the community we are in. And we are in a community at Bellingcat. I did a survey. It's a little bit outdated, a few years ago, but at that point of time, half of our community did open source research in their free time. The other half, roundabout, right? It's not exact data, but the other half had a job in this area. So this is a very interesting environment that you don't find in many spaces. And I really want that the toolkit is accessible to everyone, also to people who do this in their free time. I would say other criteria, yeah, the relevance should be there in some way. We are really open to different tools, but it should really have a clear application to open source research, right? Because we are in a space that is also overlapping with data analysis tasks, with traditional journalism. So it's sometimes also not easy to draw the line. Where does our tool space start and where does it end? But yeah, that's the people at least and the communities I have in mind or had in mind, still have in mind when I designed this toolkit. It's always possible to suggest, right? And the only thing that is really important to me is I get a lot of suggestions from commercial tool providers who are very keen to be included in this toolkit, but they are less keen to share with us the limitations of their tools, right? So if you work in a marketing department for a company that develops a tool, and you make money with it and your job depends on it, it's way more difficult for you to communicate, okay, this tool can do this, but it cannot do this. And that is really what is important for me, that we, at no point, we want to make this toolkit, we don't want to turn it into a marketing space where we just have, tool descriptions that are written in a very positive way. We really want to reflect on each tool and point out what works and what doesn't work. And I think that also sets us apart. That's what the community really needs, because many people are not sure. They see a tool name, but they don't know, should I try it out? Should I not try it out? And sometimes it really requires a learning curve to get into a tool. And it happens to so many people. They spend 3 days learning a tool to find out what what was promised doesn't work at all. And that is the worst thing ever. So yeah, for us, the critical reflection on a tool, whatever tool it is very important.
Yes, and that's also why it's so important to keep the list updated as well, because I know how quickly these tools also break and fall away. And that's why it's really important. Please do get your questions in, by the way, in the chat. We have about 15 minutes left. And if you are a volunteer and want to join on the stage, please do request it. I have a list of names of people who've helped on this project. So if you are one of them and do want to speak about your experience, feel free to request. I just wanted to thank Martin, who I noticed has just dropped off. So thank you so much for talking on your experience. Brackish Line has asked, curious to hear more about how you're all approaching maintaining the toolkit and how to maintain enthusiasm for maintenance. Really great question. At least in my experience, the lure of creating more new content can feel more compelling than keeping existing materials updated.
Yeah, so that is definitely the case, right? It's way more exciting to write a tool description and focus on a new tool. It's true, it's a challenge. And the toolkit is still very new, right? To be honest, I don't know how well it will go over time with maintaining the tool descriptions. I really hope it will work out. But basically, my idea is that we just become more collaborative. Because if one person maybe wrote a toolkit description at some point and then is not very motivated anymore to continue maintaining it, there is, or at least I see opportunities of collaboration with especially universities, with students, or hopefully also newsrooms and journalists, so that we can hand over the task to look at a specific tool. So that might be one solution to it. If it doesn't work that one person looks at the same tool for 5 years, why not hand it over to a person to whom it is still new, right? So that is one approach. And of course, the Bellingcat team is also still there, right? So this is the reason why it is a community project. But what I also really learned during this project is that you need a lot of coordination. It's really required to keep a group of volunteers active and alive. And it's also really, it depends on how much energy you put in. Because if you don't put in much energy, then also this is communicated to the people who contribute. They feel this right away. So if I would just say, look, I'll contribute, but I don't have much time, I'm sure it would be quite difficult to keep up the motivation. But I feel as long as people see that, first of all, it's active. The Bellingcat team is also active and other people also actively contribute. And secondly, I think people need to see that it has an impact, because nobody wants to volunteer their time to something that isn't used. So, and this is actually the next phase, which will be quite exciting for us to see, okay, to which extent do open source researchers actually use this resource? And we are quite positive. But yeah, I think that will also define a lot of the success and also influence a lot how motivated the community will be to put a lot of effort into this toolkit, because it is a lot of work, right? But we definitely feel it's worth it, because we feel it's something that was simply missing in this specific form. And even us with our old toolkit, which was used a lot, right? It was used a lot, but even our old toolkit couldn't provide the depth of information that we have here. And I really hope that can also help all of us generate energy and motivation for this project, including Bellingcat staff, but also the wider community who is invited to contribute.
Definitely. And I think that comes with the Bellingcat staff also making use of it. I mean, yesterday I found myself searching it for a tool that was working on X to map out networks, and found the toolkit really useful for that. So I'm already using it as a staff member. And I think the more we can regularly use it, the more we'll be pushed to maintain it as well. Drew has asked, as someone who is just getting into OSINT, what is the best philosophy when approaching tools? As with anything, I find that I spend so much time assessing the tools, I lose my direction with my project. Where does one draw the line with assessing and incorporating tools into our practice? So this is a question moving away from the toolkit slightly and the use of tools in general.
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I have discussed with a lot of open source researchers exactly about that. Many people told me the same, right? It's very difficult, especially if you start, to know where to start and at which point you even need to integrate a tool, because you're so confused. And especially people who used the previous version of the Bellingcat toolkit, they told me this. They told me, look, I opened this, I'm an absolute beginner, and there are hundreds of tools listed. I have no idea where to start and whether I should even include tools. So yeah, I have heard this a lot. So the thing is, tools are not everything, right? I feel often in conversations, especially for people who start out, they often think, okay, I right away need to know all the tools, otherwise I cannot be a good open source researcher. And that is not true at all. You can do amazing research without using many tools. You can do research just using search engines, and that's all. And you can come to amazing results. So tools, it's not everything to use tools, but it can make your work a bit easier in many cases. And how I personally would start, if you really feel lost, I would just start by looking at a few commonly used tools. And basically, we created a section in the toolkit exactly because many people brought up this issue. They said, look, I don't know where to start. You need to give us a bit of guidance. And we included a section which is called Most Used. And in this section, we really list tools that are very commonly used. So if you start by looking at these tools, you cannot go wrong, because these tools will be important in any case for you, or at least in many cases. And if you look at these tools, you will see, okay, you can learn a lot. Just decide on one tool, take an hour or more and try it out. And this is how you, I feel over time, if you have done this often enough, you also get a better feeling of when you should include a tool in your research and when not. It comes over time. But at the beginning, it's completely overwhelming. I know that. And yeah, that's why we have the most used category. And that's also where the AI search might be able to help you, right? For instance, if you have found an interesting Telegram post, but you have no idea, okay, now I'm on Telegram, I know there's something to research, but I don't really know how to continue, should I use a tool or not, then you can use our AI search just to type in, okay, do you have any tools for researching Telegram? And then you get a list of tools, hopefully with Telegram tools, and you can start from there. So especially for beginners, this can help a little bit. I think even more than for people who search for something extremely specific.
Absolutely. Tristan's actually put in the chat, plus one to tools aren't everything. I remember when I was fairly new to Bellingcat and asked Eric what his favorite tool and most useful tools were, and he just said Google, which is amazing. And
true, yeah.
Very true. A lot of people are saying that they used to use the old toolkit and they're loving the new version. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank everybody who's worked on the project, yourself included, and all the volunteers who I know are listening as well. So thank you so much for adapting this. We've only got about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, moving away slightly from the tools, because this toolkit doesn't just contain tools, but it also contains resources. And I wanted to ask you about the decision to also include those, and how those are also going to be kept updated in regards to the safety resources and the education resources, etc.
Yeah, so basically our resources section is also something that we just took over from our last toolkit. So we had for a long time guides and handbooks, and we have a section also or a great link to a document that lists a lot of academic research for open source research, and the academic world loves it. So we have a few things that are not specifically tools, but that can help people either get insights into academic research, but also into learning maybe how to get started. So we have a section, guides and handbooks, and we really want to continue adding every type of research type of research that can help us learn more about either open source research overall, right, or about specific aspects of open source research. And yeah, we will definitely keep this up to date as we can. What we have in there at the moment, of course, links like the verification handbook, maybe you might have heard of it. It's a really great resource to learn more about verification and approaches to it. We also have linked to online courses, for instance, or a YouTube series that can help you learn more about open source research. Yeah, and we will definitely expand this over time. Yeah, it's a good point, because if you're new, it might be worth looking there. We also have a section now for newsletters and toolkits. So we decided we really also want to link out to toolkits of other people, right? Because they might, or organizations, they might take a different approach to creating a toolkit, but it might be useful for some people who prefer this approach. So yeah, we will definitely keep this up to date. And we also have a section about how to stay safe while doing research. I have to say, at Bellingcat, we are not the super experts at security topics, right? There are organizations out there that fully focus on that. Bellingcat, that's not us. We of course, try to keep ourselves safe, but it's not our core expertise. But yeah, we will also keep this section up to date and try to add whatever we come across in terms of, okay, what can help us to maybe not need to look at images full of blood on a daily basis. What when should I use a VPN and things like that.
Amazingly useful. Just as a final recap, how can people get involved with the toolkit? Where can they find the links to the forms? How do they submit suggestions?
Yeah, so we have either in the toolkit links to the form where you can try to make suggestions to contribute and suggest tools and write descriptions. And we also have an article on the Bellingcat website about the toolkit, which we can link below. And there you find all types of links to how you can contribute. You find a link to a feedback form, and we really love to have your feedback. Don't be shy to give us also harsh feedback and make clear suggestions, because it really helps us improve over time. And we are still developing and improving this toolkit, right? Having or maintaining such a toolkit, it's not something that ever stops. So it's an ongoing work. So feel free to make suggestions. Let us know what doesn't work and what works. And you also find a link there to how to apply to become a Bellingcat volunteer. So you find all these things there. And we also have an email address specifically for the toolkit, which is toolkit@bellingcat.com. So quite easy. Feel also free to reach out via this email address to us.
Incredible. If you want to learn more about the volunteer community as well, feel free to ask myself, Giancarlo, or Victoria, who's currently typing in the chat, and we can tell you a lot more about the volunteer community as well if you want to learn more. Thank you so much, Joanna, for joining us today and going through the toolkit, giving us the ins and outs. It's been fabulous listening to you talk about the project, and thank you again to Martin for joining the volunteer. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another stage talk, but until then, I will see you around the server. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the stage talk. If you'd like to catch a stage talk live where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.